Happy Earth Month, everybody. I know that every year we write down different goals that we want to accomplish. And maybe one of your goals for 2024 is to shop sustainably. Well, here's some fantastic news. Macy's makes it easy to do just that. This Earth Month, join Macy's in an effort to shop more sustainably with brands like Carter's Little Planet, Oak, On 34th, Elemis, and more. And by the way, who doesn't love going to the park, especially in the spring? Super cute little doggies on leashes, soaking up the sun with your friends or your kids or your little nieces and nephews. Well, check this out. Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project. Their goal is to transform vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help create healthy, livable communities for generations to come. I love that a big brand like Macy's is supporting small changes to make a huge difference. Donate online or in store and learn more at Macy's.com/purpose. This is Heather Dubrow's World, and now you can live in it two times a week right here on Podcast One. Welcome back, everybody. I'm so thrilled about today's guest. You know, she and I are similarly aged, and I remember, you know, being a teenager and watching her and just being in awe of her beauty. And I didn't also realize how talented, how creative, how resilient, how amazing. She's a supermodel. She's a writer. She has a new book called No Filter. Please welcome. It's amazing, by the way, Polina Porizkova.
Thank you, Heather.
Hi.
You're kind. Hi.
Hi, you look gorgeous. You just came back from vacation. Where were you?
I was in Mexico, and I just came back like literally late last night. And it was like my first vacation in a while. So, God, I enjoyed every second of it. It was so great.
Yeah, I was just in, where'd you go? I was just in Cabo last week.
Tulum.
Oh, Tulum. I just went to Tulum for the first time, but I was working, so I didn't really get to see it. But is it fabulous?
You know what? There was a lot of seaweed, which people complain about, but I don't honestly really care. The weather was beautiful. Our hotel was really cute. I was there with a girlfriend. And it was just two of us in a room running around naked and like, you know, doing our makeup together. And it was just so, it was such a pleasure to have a little bit of companionship and sun. Yeah. So yes. We could be anywhere literally, and it would have felt really great. As long as the weather was good.
I love it. All right. So, you know, when we all first, we meaning the public, all became aware of you, you were a supermodel. You were a model, became a supermodel. What do you think? Because obviously, I mean, you've written novels. You speak so beautifully. Your book is amazing. I mean, it's really beautifully written and sweet and prolific and all the things. So what's the biggest misconception about models?
Oh, God. Well, about models in general, I can't really tell you because I might hold some of them myself. You know, look, the facts about models is that they are very young women. They're girls. So, and the expectations that are then placed on, you know, to speak and to be, you know, to be somehow inspirational to other young women, it's a lot for basically a high school girl, you know, or a college aged girl. And I think the misconceptions sort of stem from that is that, you know, when you hold up these young girls into the public light and you have these great expectations that they're also, I guess, supposed to be, you know, super smart, super worldly, super well spoken. And they're just kids.
Yeah. They're just kids. I also think I find a lot of people when they talk about, you know, their children modeling or different people modeling is that they think it's just standing and looking pretty and being a model is it's a job. I mean, there's so much that's involved in it, but also being a creative being, there's so much more that you could do. I mean, you were a writer. I look at Gigi Hadid, who's a photographer, you know, so many different skills that people have. It's so much more than just standing and having a photo taken.
Well, you know what? I like to liken modeling to sports in a way, because what you're really doing is you're using your body. I just had a long conversation about this with a friend yesterday, who wasn't necessarily aware of the, you know, what modeling actually entails. And I'm not talking about, you know, oh, you're freezing in a bikini when it's 30 degrees and you're dying of a heat stroke, you know, when it's 115. It's not just that. It's that as a model, you're using your face and your body for your work, right? This is what you get paid for. And so what you learn are these kind of specific sort of muscular body movements and you know, expressions, and like, where is the light good? And how do I make this garment look good? It's all physical. And you know, your whole day is consumed with this. And how do you become a better model? Well, you become more self-aware of your outside. You know? Right. So it really has very little to do with your inside to actually be a really good model. You just have to have that sort of, I guess it's called physical intelligence, which mm-hmm. is what athletes need. You know, it's like you need to know how high to jump in space to grab for the ball. And in modeling, you have to know the little millimeter that you can turn to make your waist look tiny bit smaller and, you know, your nose a tiny bit straighter if you angle it just so. So it's all kind of like a, you know, it's like precision body movement, which is what it's about. And of course, then, you know, not a lot else is required of you except for a tremendous patience.
Yeah.
And I think it's easy for people and even for young models to forget that there is a world outside the physical.
So let's talk about being unfiltered, because you famously do not put filters on your pictures. By the way, neither do I.
Yay.
However, full disclosure, well, I really don't. And mostly because I don't know how. That's why I had children, so because they do the technology for me. And also because I don't want people to meet me and go, oh, that's what's going on there. I want, you know, this is who I am. This is what you're getting. Although, truthfully, I do have one girlfriend that does a beautiful zhuzhing job when we take a group picture. And I'm not mad about it.
Right, right, right.
But like when I take the picture, there's no zhuzhing at all. I feel the same way you do. Now, I'm curious, you know, as a model, it's so hard for women in general, for all of us to, you know, just age and the quality of the photos. And, you know, for me working on television, this high definition and, you know, you being a model, me being married to a plastic surgeon, it's so much pressure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, seriously. And so we as women and as women in the public eye, we sort of tend to get like really two choices, right? Is to try to go with what's been set as a standard of beauty and with how we are accepted, or go for the acceptance part of who we are and what we're looking like. But that you risk losing your seat at the table doing that.
That's the thing. 'Cause people will ask me, you know, why? Because so I enjoy Botox and little things like that, because everyone's got the line, right? Some people will color their hair, but they won't get Botox. Some people get Botox, but no fillers. Some people no fill, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. So I do what I'm comfortable with, a little maintenance here and there, but I haven't had surgery, which some people think is really weird being married to a plastic surgeon, but I feel like, do we have to do that? I mean, there's a piece of me that laughs like, oh, I'll be the only one, like you and me, Paulina, you and me will be the only one that'll be able to play the roles because everyone else is going to look like 15 years younger than. But I mean, joking aside, like I worry that I don't want to ever look in the mirror and not see me.
Yeah, but I would say that every day that you look in the mirror, you do see you. You just see a changed version of you. And
I mean, to have a lot of plastic surgery, I guess.
Oh, that. Well, that's a drastic change. Yes.
Yes.
I have seen plastic surgery done where it looks freaking amazing and
beautiful. Yes.
I have seen those. And like you, I'm like, hey, you know what? Whatever floats your boat, whatever you need to do in order to feel confident about yourself, do it. It's your right to do it.
If it's what you want to do.
Yeah, exactly. If it's what you want to do. And our work, being in the public eye, you know, we get scrutinized so much and so deeply. And it's not all nice out there. And I think that sort of, you know, the inclination then is to sort of give into that and fix the things that other people point out as being broken about you, the wrinkles or the sags and, you know, the lowered eyelids and the little jowls and whatever. List goes on forever. And I don't know that, look, I don't know how long I can maintain the stance that I have right now, which is I haven't done anything. Obviously, I don't have Botox. I don't have filters. I haven't had any of that stuff. I've done lasers. And I really, I think maybe because my entire life was made out of being so incredibly physically aware of myself and others. And I really find it kind of a bore. And I feel like the changes that are inevitable with age, you know, can I try to love them? Can I try to carry them proudly? Can I try to be them so that other women don't have to be ashamed of theirs? Is there a way of making aging look good if changed? Not youth, but just different, a different kind of beauty from the beauty of youth. And honestly, I don't really know. I'm sort of trying this way. And right now it seems like there are a lot of women that appreciate it.
I do. I feel the same way. I feel the same exact way. That doesn't mean I might feel differently in 5 to 10 years. I don't know, but I feel the same way right now. And I'm kind of, but I have to say, like, watching you go back on the cover, you know, of Sports Illustrated, you know, in your 50s.
I have not been on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
In Sports Illustrated.
No, I'm fine.
But you were just in Sports Illustrated.
Yeah. Like 4 years ago or something.
Yeah. But still, that's in your 50s at it's Sports Illustrated. That's huge, huge. The confidence to be able to do that and be like, look, that was then, this is now, this is how I look, this is who I am. I'm still gorgeous. I mean, that takes a lot of self and a lot of confidence, I think.
Well, the thing is, I'm not quite sure how gorgeous I actually am.
You are.
Well, thank you. No, but I mean, like, when I look at pictures of myself, I can see the difference from, you know, now and, you know, when I was 20. And I recognize that it's that things have changed. They have shifted. It's just that I like myself so much better now that I keep feeling like the shifts, you know, the sags, the cellulite, the things that come with living, they should be badges of honor, and they aren't. And can I make them look like they're cool? I don't know. I'm trying.
Maybe. Well, I have to say, as far as I'm concerned, cellulite for me, it's a hereditary thing in my family, and it used to play. It's plagued me my whole life. But in my 20s, 30s, 40s, like, it was embarrassing. Now I don't care because now it's like I'm in my 50s, so it's like it's all right.
Yeah, no, ditto for me. And and it is hereditary, and I've always had it too. But and I always, you know, there's obviously good light will show less of it, and the bad light will show a great deal of it. And I know my light. That's been my job for my entire life. I know my light. I know how to position myself, and I know which light to photograph myself in so that it looks, you know, the best that it can.
It's a skill. It's a skill.
Yeah,
all right, so tell me this. Why now? I mean, I know you wrote the book really quickly. You wrote it in like 3 months. It sounds like it was a really cathartic experience to put this all down. But why did you choose this period of time?
I didn't choose it. It chose me, Heather. Okay. This is how my life goes a lot. I don't necessarily, I think my choices become, will I seize this challenge? Will I see it through? But what comes my way is not really my decision. And the book happened the same way. It, you know, it was Maria Shriver who called me and said, I follow you on Instagram. I love what you do. Would you write a book for me? Oh, and can you do it in 3 months?
Well, when Maria calls, you just say.
Well, to me, it sounded like a challenge. I was like, I have no idea if me or anyone can write a book in 3 months. And I see it as a dare. So I can't turn down challenges. I really love to be challenged. That's either an inadequacy or something good about me. But I do love a good challenge. And, you know, and also I had just come from the reality show in the jungle, which was also an incredible challenge. And that was a physical challenge. And I was kind of unable to walk for months.
I can't believe you did that.
Yeah, that was kind of crazy. I still keep thinking, I regret doing it because I've been having such trouble with my hips ever since. But at the same time, I don't regret doing it because if not, then when?
This is Heather Dubrow's World.
It's your favorite Jersey housewife, Melissa Gorga, and I'm so excited to announce the start of season 2 of my podcast, Melissa Gorga on Display. We're taking it to the next level this season with more juicy conversations with my celebrity friends, including my funny hubby, Joe Gorga, plus all things entrepreneurship, family and parenthood, pop culture, and of course, I'll always spill the tea on what's going on in my world. It's my life unfiltered. Make sure to check out season 2 of Melissa Gorga on Display. Available on Podcast One, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Happy Earth Month, everybody. I know that every year we write down different goals that we want to accomplish. And maybe one of your goals for 2024 is to shop sustainably. Well, here's some fantastic news. Macy's makes it easy to do just that. This Earth Month, join Macy's in an effort to shop more sustainably with brands like Carter's Little Planet, Oak, On 34th, Elemis, and more. And by the way, who doesn't love going to the park, especially in the spring? Super cute little doggies on leashes, soaking up the sun with your friends or your kids or your little nieces and nephews. Well, check this out. Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project. Their goal is to transform vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help create healthy, livable communities for generations to come. I love that a big brand like Macy's is supporting small changes to make a huge difference. Donate online or in store and learn more at Macy's.com/purpose.
Now back to Heather Dubrow's World.
Yeah, it's interesting. I am, you know, in my 30s and 40s, it was, you know, obviously a lot of women, especially when you're on television or a model or any in that field, your physical appearance is part of your job, like you were saying. So you have to be a certain size to get into certain dresses. You're on television, it adds weight, the whole thing. Now I'm more of the mind that I want to be strong. Mm-hmm. It's not so much about how I look. And I mean, of course I care, I'm vain, definitely, but I want to be strong. I remember seeing a photo of Goldie Hawn with her granddaughter on her back and walking down the road. And I'm like, I want to be that. That looks appealing to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, agreed. I mean, it's all about likewise, I am vain and I shall not deny it because why? exercise has become a lot more for me about being able to use the body that I was given as long as possible. And right now it's not as great as it could be. So I'm sort of like facing the challenges of what it is like to have an aging body that occasionally doesn't want to do the things that you want it to do and how to navigate around that. It hasn't been the most fun that I've ever had, but I'm also not going to let that defeat me. I just have to figure out how to navigate it.
Yeah, the ways around it. So before you wrote the book, did you talk to your sons about it? Because one of my things, especially doing a podcast, and be on a reality show and all that kind of stuff is, you know, the ages, your boys are adults. Yeah. So it's a little bit different. I still have some younger kids, but, you know, I always try to walk the line with my family in general about what I want to talk about versus what is, you know, their lives also, and making decisions for them. So tell me about that whole process and your kids.
Well, like you said, my sons are fully grown men, and my God, they are the greatest men ever. I'm so glad to have raised the kind of men that I would have liked to have met. They're truly phenomenal. And when I was writing the book, no, I didn't really talk to them ahead of it because I didn't know what I was writing. I had 3 months to write something, and I was just kind of, you know, I did one of those like slash the veins, let the blood pour, and then, you know, I'll figure out what to do with it. But once I had written the book and I realized how much of it entailed my husband, you know, obviously because he was my entire life from the time I was 19. Then I asked them to read it before it went to my publication to make sure that they were okay with, you know, whatever I said. And there were a couple of things here and there that they asked me not to, which of course I removed. But they read it, and I can't tell you how gratifying it is to have these, you know, fully grown children that look at you and they see you. They now see me as a person as well as a mother.
Yeah.
And the way they act towards me, and, you know, they read the book and they sort of both went, yeah, Mom, this is you. This is who you are. I recognize you. You're entirely truthful. This is your story. You have my blessings.
God, that's so empowering. Isn't it amazing? My two oldest are 19, but once they get past that douchey stage, when they're like in their early teens and they come back and they're like fully formed humans, they're so great, aren't they?
I honestly, everybody says, oh, you know, enjoy them when they're little because it doesn't last. I feel like I've enjoyed my children incrementally as they've gotten older. And now that my job is done, I mean, I've populated the world with two extraordinary human beings. How cool is that?
Well, you did your job. I mean, it's incredibly cool. And I agree with you. The baby stuff is fun. By the way, it doesn't go by fast. It's long. It's long, many years. And then I agree with you. I enjoy my kids as people, as human.
Yeah.
And I think that's a pat on our back that we've done a good job with that. So take me back to sort of the beginning of the end. So you were obviously famously married to Rick Ocasek from The Cars, you know, from everyone looking in, you guys, this super couple. I mean, it reminds me of what, you know, Megan Fox and Machine Gun Kelly are today, like this gorgeous, talented actress, model, and this rock star. And everyone's like, wow, this is the coolest thing ever. And you guys were together for a long time, but you were such a child when you met him.
Yeah, I was 19 when we met. And you know what? For I'd say 25 years, we really did have what it looked like we had from the outside. I was incredibly happy with him for a long time. We were both very, you know, people that grew up with, you know, difficult parents, perhaps, you know, situations that were out of our control. And we amassed scars that at the moment we met fit perfectly together. But of course, because I was 19 and he was 41, I kept growing up and he did not. And I think, you know, in retrospect, I think that was one of the reasons why our marriage didn't last. But it's not the only one.
But if you think about it, I mean, 25 years is a long time.
When somebody says I've been married for 23 years, we're like, whoa, that's a really long time. Good for you. I mean, my husband and I were together for 33. 35 with the 2 years we were separated, but still lived together. This was soulmates. This was soulmates for a long time. And I'm so now I'm so deeply grateful for having met him when I did and having had him in my life, because he for a long time, he was sort of my vacation from loneliness and self-doubt and feeling inadequate and, you know, not feeling like I mattered. He was my vacation from all of that because he loved me in the only way he knew how.
So do you think had he lived, do you think you would have gotten back together or stayed together?
No, we would have not stayed together because he had given up on our marriage. So no, that there was no going back. And also once, I think, you know, once you fall out of love, I don't really see how you recapture it. And he had stopped growing long before we decided to split up. And I think the biggest problem to me was that he wouldn't talk about it. He had some sort of pride. I don't know if it was a sort of narcissism or a kind of male ego thing, but he wouldn't let me in on why he didn't want to contribute to the marriage, why he didn't want to go here or do this or touch me or even go to dinner. And he wouldn't tell me why. And I feel like had he talked to me, yeah, I would have stayed with him, but he couldn't. He didn't know how.
Do you think that's a generational thing?
I don't know, because I've only encountered it once in my life, so I don't know.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, I always talk about my parents were very like 1950s, you know, they didn't talk about things. Everything was kind of swept under the rug, but he wasn't that much younger then.
No, I guess that's true. And I think, you know, perhaps that's when his age also came into it, is that he, you know, but I think pride had a lot to do with it. Yeah. He was a very, very proud person and he had a very hard time being vulnerable. And I think when our relationship called for vulnerability, he wasn't able to show.
Wow. And what about, and so was that really hard on the kids, even though they were grown?
It was really, really hard on the kids. And in part because I never let on how sad and lonely I was feeling in my marriage. And we were not the kind of couple that would shout at each other or have giant arguments. And, you know, we were always very cordial to each other. So I don't think my kids saw it coming. And I think that was one of the things that kind of ended up being a bad thing in the long run, because when we told them, which was, I believe, right after Christmas 2018, the reaction was, but I had no idea. What do you mean? But I didn't know. And so they kind of felt like the rug was really pulled out from under them, you know, that they had no warning.
Right.
And in retrospect, I sort of regret that I didn't let them see a little bit more of what was actually going on.
It's hard as a parent. This is the hardest job. I mean, it's hard to know, you know, you want to be honest with your kids and share things with them, but you know, they're living their own lives and going through their own things in school and as young adults. And yeah, no, I get it. It's a tough.
And I think I also came from a background with my parents who used each other in the divorce against each other. You know, father is a bastard, your mother is a whore. So it was a lot of that. And so I knew that when I had children, I would never try to turn them against my mate, no matter what I thought of them, because of what that does to the child, you know, taking out your personal feelings, putting them on your child is a really brutal thing to do to your child.
Yeah.
And so if you care about your kids, I feel like you really keep them out of that.
Yeah, for sure. So, but you and Rick seem to still have a good relationship. You're living in the same house together. I mean, if you got to read the book and all of it, but you know, I know that you found Rick when he passed away and had to go through all the emotionality of that, this partner of your life for 30 plus years. I mean, so intense and emotional. And then to get a letter saying that you've been completely disinherited for abandonment. What does that do to a person?
Nothing good. Nothing good. That was the period from my husband's death and until fairly recently was at times felt unbearable. Now I'm sort of welling up with tears. Forgive me, I don't mean to be self-pitying. It's just that I'm sort of proud of myself for having survived it, to tell you the truth, because at times I wasn't sure that I would. You know, this was a man that I, regardless of where we were at, you know, with our marriage, I mean, I trusted him implicitly. He was a part of me. He was an extension of me. I thought, yes, and obviously naively, I believed that he felt the same way about me as I did about him, which is, I will love you forever. I can't be with you anymore, but I will love you forever, and I will be by you. I will be by your side. I will help you.
I will take care of you.
I will take care of you when, like, if you need care, then I'll be there to take care of you. And you know, we were talking about getting, you know, we were going to sell our house and we were going to get apartments, and we kept talking about, oh, you know, where do you want to live? Oh, downtown. Let's get apartments close to each other. Cause he wanted to get a little, a cat, a little girl cat. And I kept saying, well, when you're out of town, I'm happy to watch your kitty. You can watch, you know, my dog. And like, I thought that we were navigating the end of our marriage, beautifully, with love, with all the love that we had for each other. And so when the will came up, it was sort of like it killed me in the way of who I believed that I was and what I believed he was to me for my entire life. So navigating, you know, and then at like, what, how old was I? Like 54, 55? I can't even remember when he died, but it was a little bit like, you know, somebody handed you a present, which was a grenade, and it blew up your everything, you know, your house, the foundations, every piece of clothing you've ever owned, gone. Everything is gone in an instant. And so, yeah, how does one come back from that? And that's what I have been doing ever since, is trying to come back from that.
This is Heather Dubrow's World.
Is this thing on? I'm Caitlin Bristow, host of Off the Vine podcast, where I get real. Well, maybe a little too real sometimes, with my friends and celeb guests from Bachelor franchise and beyond. I'm talking guests like Jonathan Van Ness, Nikki Glaser, Wells Adams, Elise Myers.
Just like in this like business jacket, like I would love some tacos.
Heidi D'Amelio, Big Brother's Taylor Hale.
I have to bring it up because it happened and we're going to get through it.
What'd I do?
And so many more. So come hang out with us, hear ridiculous confessions, and get a little vulnerable, because you know what? We're all just floating on this weird little planet together. Follow, rate, and review Off the Vine podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
You're listening to Heather Dubrow's World.
How do you navigate that? So you have two sons and then you have four stepsons, right?
Uh-huh.
And he cut two of the stepsons out of the will too.
Two of his two oldest sons.
So, I mean, do your boys, well, you obviously had to deal with the funeral and all this until you could talk to the kids, because they were obviously named in the will, so they saw it.
Yeah.
And how did you navigate all that? Were the other two stepsons just devastated? And did anyone offer to like split up the money evenly? Because, you know, money and relatives does not go well.
No, it's such a cesspool.
Yeah.
No, the older two sons tried to, I think, sue the estate, and they were given a tiny little handout just to go away. The thing is, I was on the side of all the sons. I still don't understand my husband's reasoning, and I do think he was influenced by the people that were working for him. And I think those are the people that made some dreadful decisions. Mm. And I sort of hold them accountable in my mind for what went down. Because Rick, towards the end of his life, which of course we didn't know was the end of his life, really, he sort of disconnected from everything and then tried to reconnect with his old friends. And he got so much friendlier and so much sweeter, I think, because he knew he wasn't going to have me to provide his social life. He realized how alone he would be.
Yeah.
And so I think he panicked a little bit and started really investing in friend relationships that he had never done before. A lot of people were kind of puzzled by it, actually. But he did. And, you know, kudos to him that he was trying to do that. But I think that his, because Rick really had no friends. And I think his business associates were what he thought of as friends. And I think, so they just could pretty much tell him anything they wanted and got their way on it. And I think that's what happened.
Are you angry still? I mean, I'm assuming you were angry, because I'd be infuriated. I've had not the same situation, but a situation where someone lied to me on their deathbed. And it was like, it just pissed.
Well, good for you that you were pissed, because I think if you're angry, there's a certain power and energy to anger.
Yeah.
I was so devastated by his death that it was really difficult for me to be angry. I write about it in my book. That's like, you know, like I would get flare up with anger, especially when somebody would talk about it in the press or, you know, when I would hear people say, yeah, you didn't deserve his money. And I'd be like, what? What planet are we living on here?
By the way, had you gotten divorced, you would have gotten half.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that would fire me up. That would make me really angry. But besides that, I just didn't have it in me to actually be truly angry at him. I just felt so betrayed. I was drowning. It's not a good time. But I also saw the pain of his children, of his two older sons, and what it did to them, how awful it felt to be so completely dismissed as if they had never existed. You know, he didn't even leave them like a guitar, you know, like nothing, like right, literally like they didn't matter.
Right. Because it's not just about the money. It's not just about the money, because that's what people think. Oh, everyone's greedy. They just want the money. It's not about that. It's about feeling your worth from your dad.
It's having some validation that your father knew you existed.
Cared,
which he clearly did not very much. And yes, all the money went to four of his sons, to our two being the main beneficiaries. But it was set up in a way where my sons will never have the right to decide how it's administered, or it's all of that has gone to the business people. So they get a percentage, but they have no say about anything. So had they wanted to share with their brothers, they couldn't have.
Wow.
Amazing. Had they wanted to share with me, they couldn't have. It was done in such a way that the business people hold all the power.
So once you get through everything and you open your eyes and you realize you have no money.
Yeah. Actually, I did have money. I had assets.
Right.
Because we were still married. So yeah, I wasn't penniless. I was just cashless, which is different. It's different. You know, there are women who end up with nothing, and I was very fortunate not to be that. So I do have to kind of separate it, because I did have pension plans that I can't access for another 10 years. And I had two houses that were mortgaged, and I couldn't pay for them, but I had them. They were mine. So they were mine to sell.
Right.
So, you know, that's, of course. So as I'm struggling to sell the houses so that I can get some money to live, COVID hits. And we all know how popular New York became.
Best time to sell.
Right? It was great. Fabulous. So that's the whirlwind or the tornado I got caught up in.
I mean, I can't even imagine, first, because grief, you know, I know can be so isolating anyway. And now you're in a pandemic, completely isolated, and isolated in your grief is a double whammy, and having to sell homes, and this whole notion that women, many women, go through where they feel like financially they are being taken care of. And then like the rug gets pulled out from under you. And yeah, you were lucky to have assets, all that, but still, to go from having a certain lifestyle to not having it and not having the cash flow is jarring.
Yeah. But you know, at the time it seemed, like I said, my entire life as I knew it disappeared. Everything. My lifestyle, my houses, like, you know, everything just went poof, gone. So, you know, I don't think that I spent too much focus on just one particular thing at the time. It was just all over bad. Everything sucked. And I was just trying not to kill myself, basically.
Did you feel that low?
Yeah, I did feel that low.
How did you bounce back from that? What did you go to therapy?
Well, I wouldn't say that I bounced back. I don't think it's so funny. We do use the word bounce back, and bounce is such
bounce a, sounds fast.
Bounce is such a lovely word that yeah. I would love for bounce to actually be an, you know, to be able to work that into your emotional life. But I don't think that there is any such thing. I didn't bounce back. I grew back tiny, tiny bit by tiny, tiny bit. Yes, of course, I've been in therapy since my 40s. So obviously I added up a little bit more therapy. I started taking SAM-E, which is, they kind of call them nature's antidepressants.
Mm-hmm.
So I put myself on fairly high doses of SAM-E. And then I did everything that you've ever heard of as far as like the woo-woo stuff, you yep. know, just like load me up with it because I'm drowning here and I will grasp at straws. So I was grasping at straws. I was, you know, I was going to psychics and I was doing past life regressions and I was doing tapping and I was doing EMDR and I was doing hypnosis and I was, you know, I was doing everything I could. This was really the time in my life in which, to a certain extent, I was the most open, because I realized that saying no at that point to anything was pointless. That would be a shut door. And I needed to just fling all the doors wide open in my life to see where to go next.
Yeah.
And so I left myself open to every new experience. And I think, you know, and it's not like, oh, what worked? I don't know. Everything accumulatively together
helped
and helped me float. Yeah. Until I learned to swim.
It's so good that you were open to that. And I also wonder if that has to do with being in your 50s, honestly, because I feel like I always say like turning 50 for me was like, you know, halftime. You know, mm-hmm. You know, you take everything you learned in the first half and you gather the team in the locker room and then, you know, you're ready to go back out. Because I can see how one could be open to all those things. I'm not sure that in your 30s you can be as open to all those things. But I love that you were able to do that and to try to heal yourself and just be open to anything. So being open to things, and then after the isolation of the pandemic, which so many people are in, do you then come out of it like, okay, I need to date. I need love. I need all of this into my life now. I mean, did you feel like ready to go out at that point?
Yes and no. There was a man that after my husband and I separated that I fell in love with, and was a tremendous mistake on my part because, you know, again, I was sort of like fresh out of the gate, and in my head, emotionally, I was still basically 19.
Right.
You know, because that's how I had learned, like, this is what love is at 19. And so I just at 52 or 53, I'm like, I'm still like, ooh, 19. well, so that smacked me in the face. Also during the pandemic, this man chose to leave me the day I was moving out of my house. Not super well timed. I've actually been thinking about that in the last few days, how interesting it is that sometimes I look at my life and I zoom out really, really far out to sort of see my life as a timeline. Yeah, I'm like a little, you know, a little piece on the chessboard, and I try to take in like how things moved and why they moved a certain way and what sort of a person did that make me. So, and there's a sort of a natural flow in my life. It's like, you know, a bad thing happens, but it propels me to learn this, which then in turn takes and, you know, and I do something else. And then when that crashes and burns, and that propels me into something else. And it was quite a wonderful thing to see your life this way, because I got to the point of where this guy, that I've had a pretty rough time getting over this. And I thought, oh, now with, you know, hindsight, he was a bridge. He was just a bridge from my old life into my new life. And he was not a weight bearing bridge, because the bridge decided to cave in on me while I was in the middle of it and went, I can't handle your weight. Boom.
Yeah.
Down you go. And that made me have to crawl up the embankment, you know, tooth and nail, using my hands, using my legs, using everything I had to climb out of there. And it restructured me into a whole new person. And so we're talking now, it's been a little over three years since my husband died, and two and some since this man left. And I woke up this year feeling like, for the first time, that life is just getting started. Like, the best is yet to come.
Oh, that gave me chills. I love that.
And I am the best equipped that I've ever been.
Yes.
To enjoy every freaking moment of it.
And there's nothing to lose, because it's the second half of the game.
This is Heather Dubrow's World.
Hi guys, I'm Teresa Giudice, and you know me from the Real Housewives in New Jersey. And now you'll know me from my new podcast, Namaste Bitches, with my co-host, Melissa Feaster.
What's up, you guys? I'm Melissa Feaster, and Teresa and I are talking about everything. Love, life, relationships, yes, sex, food, and family. We are getting into it all.
It's a real look at my life when the cameras aren't rolling. But don't worry, we'll be talking about all that TV stuff too.
So follow, rate, and review Namaste Bitches now at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now back to Heather Dubrow's World.
So how do you date? I mean, You go on Maya, Bumble. What are you doing?
Oh, I've been on all the apps. There were some people I talked to that I did podcasts with that told me like, oh, you should be on this app. You should be on this app. So I've been on all the apps, and then I've done a lot of dating. Actually, I got a little sweet message from an Instagram follow yesterday. It's a sweet guy who said, you know, would you ever consider dating like a normal guy? And I was like, dude, I've been dating nothing but normal guys since I've been dating. Done a lot of so-called normal guys. And it's been a really eye-opening experience. It's been a learning experience. I always think that the bad date makes a really good story. And so I've got a ton of good stories.
Oh my God, that's so great. I love that. All right. Before we go, I have to talk about your wallpaper because I'm obsessed with your wallpaper. I'm a wallpaper whore. I love wallpaper so much. It's gorgeous.
Yay. I'm so happy to find one of my own, a wallpaper whore.
It is. I'm in a rental house right now, but I put wallpaper in every room. I have wallpaper on ceilings, closets. I think there's something so special about wallpaper. Is that insane that that's what makes me happy?
Not in the least. In fact, my wallpaper for about 2 years, I've been in this apartment for 2 years. And ever since I've moved in and hung up my wallpaper, I literally, every time I come back from a trip and I open my door, I go, oh, hello, house. But really what I mean is hello, wallpaper.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there's something about, and you seem very happy in your home. Like I can see it in your face when you talk about it. And there's something about creating that environment that it's all part of it. You want to be healthy. You want to be around good friends. You want your family, all of that. But it's also the environment that you create for yourself that adds to that whole picture, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. And if you're fortunate enough to be able to create an environment that you like, because obviously when I was a kid, man, we didn't have the money to get anything. And I used to paint my own walls for years. In fact, here I've painted some of my own walls too. This was the first time that I got to make my own space by myself in pretty much my entire life. And I thought I found this really awesome stick and peel wallpaper because this is a rental. So like, I'm not technically allowed to hang wallpaper.
Right.
So, and I can just like pull it down and like peel it off. But my boys came into this house after I moved in and they just walked through and they went, oh, mom, it's so you.
Oh, I feel that comment and the inflection very deep in my soul. I love it. That's so fantastic. Well, I have loved chatting with you. Your book is amazing. Polina Porizkova, No Filter. You can get it anywhere books are sold. Tell everyone how to find you on social media because you're so fun to follow.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's actually really easy. It's just my name, Polina Porizkova, but leave off the A, not for extra savings, but apparently because my name is too long for Instagram. on Instagram, and come and join me and my crew on IG.
Where
I strip naked, literally and figuratively, on a weekly basis.
I love it. I hope our paths cross again soon.
Me too, Heather. It was so fun to talk to you. Thank you so much.
This is Heather Dubrow's World. Here's Heather.
Oh my God, I love her. That was so great. Go pick up her book. Follow her on Instagram. Polina's just amazing. Thank you guys so much for being here. If you have a second, leave us a 5-star review and say what you love about Heather Dubrow's World, and we will see you next time. Thank you so much for listening to Heather Dubrow's World. Download new episodes every Thursday and Friday on Podcast One, the Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts. And please make sure to subscribe to the show and leave a lovely 5-star rating. Go to Apple Podcasts and say how much you love Heather Dubrow's World. See you next week.
all month long on Pluto TV. Stream the biggest Tyler Perry movies free. Watch your favorites like Madea's Witness Protection and Madea's Big Happy Family. Join Tyler Perry as he goes on a couples retreat with Sharon Leal in Why Did I Get Married? Or Idris Elba and Gabrielle Union in the Tyler Perry-directed film Daddy's Little Girls. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows. Available on live and on demand. Download the free Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.